This is the Austin Road Show podcast. The Roads Rewind.
I am as honored and proud as I can be to introduce you to, well, I say introduce you to, if you've lived in Augusta about 20, 25 years or so, you should remember the work of Tommy Tomlinson. He was one of the most talented writers the Chronicle had during his time here, and what a golden era in Augusta Chronicle reporting that was. I'm going to say hello to him right now so I can chat with him about some of his old friends before we get into his book. Tommy, how are you?
I'm doing great, Austin. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. But first off, I'm going to tell you, I tuned in to your long conversation with Poznanski, and I learned more about the Cleveland Indians than I ever wanted to. I won't press you about the Indians, I promise.
Yeah, that's sort of his job, is to talk about the Indians all the time, yeah.
I'm hoping he'll have you back on where you can concentrate on the book, because he's got a large audience, and I think the book deserves the attention. Way more interesting than the Cleveland Indians, if you ask me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, listen, first of all, I want to remind everyone, if you have not picked up on the incredibly odd and strange documentary that came out a few years ago called Bound by Flesh, which is a bio documentary on Daisy and Violet Hilton, the famous Siamese twins, probably the second most famous Siamese twins, behind the, was it the Ng brothers?
Behind Chang and Ng, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hilton sisters, spent the last few years of their lives in Charlotte, where I live. And so I had written a big story about them that ended up, their story became a Broadway show and then a documentary. And so I'm in that documentary that you mentioned.
Yeah, I was going to say, you became something of an authority on it, and imagine my surprise when I was watching it, and there's Tommy Tomlinson. Holy cow.
I know.
How many years did you spend in Augusta, Tommy?
I was there 3 years. It's funny, I was waiting to talk to you. I was hearing the traffic on the radio, and Bobby Jones Expressway and Gordon Highway, they're all still backed up like they were when I was there. I was there from 1986 to 1989. With the Chronicle and the Herald, which was an afternoon paper that published back then, and covered cops, covered courts, local politics, a little bit of everything in those 3 years.
I started showing up at some of the same meetings that you covered in 87, and I stuck around after you left. But some of the great names from back in that era, Hal Hewell and Amy Swan and Linda Day, I think she came on later on after that, Dan Atkins. These are
yep,
great reporters that moved on to other places, and Amy, God rest her soul, passed away a couple of years ago. It really is a shame what has happened to local journalism in the advent of the digital era, and I know that you have written about this extensively and talked about it in your various incarnations. By the way, TommyTomlinson.com is a great resource for everything Tommy's doing. Before we get into your book, which I'm absolutely thrilled to talk to you about, what's your feeling about what we've seen happen to the print journalism industry in the last 10, 15 years?
Well, it's not going away. I mean, it's at its core an advertising issue. It used to be that the local daily newspaper was the most reliable place to buy advertising. So if you were a car dealer, or you were trying to sell a house, or just something simple, like you had a garage sale or something like that, the best place to put that ad was in the local paper, because you knew people were going to see it. It had the best bang for your buck as far as people buying it. So that's why, for example, the Sunday paper in Augusta and elsewhere used to be this big, thick, suitcase thing that landed on your doorstep every Sunday. Well, with Craigslist, especially for classified ads, and then the internet for everything else, Google and Facebook and all those things, those became so prevalent that all the ad dollars, or the vast majority of them, went that way. I think the economics that people didn't really understand is that what you paid for the newspaper every day was just a small fraction of the revenue. Most of that money was from advertising. And so once that advertising money disappeared, the money to fund those big newsrooms disappeared. And over the last 10, 12 years, you have seen this slow circling down the drain of what were great newspapers all over the country, because they can't make enough money anymore to support themselves.
And isn't it such a strange and odd postscript to that comment that now more than ever, because of digital delivery, what is being written by local newspaper reporters is more widely read than was ever possible before?
Right, yeah. The average person can, you know, more people can see the average story written by the average newspaper reporter than they used to be able to. The problem is they can't, you know, generate enough ad revenue from that story to, you know, fund a big newsroom.
Yeah.
And so it is. It's a terrible dilemma where in some ways local news has more readership than it's ever had, but the revenue they can generate from that is less than they've ever had, too.
Can you imagine what a thrill it would have been for you back when you first got started in journalism at the Augusta Chronicle if your mom and your sister had been able to go into the kitchen and open a computer and read, you know, your latest article?
Oh, yeah, it would have been fantastic. I used to have to save them up, you know, save the actual printed sections and either mail them home or take them home when I went down to South Georgia so that they could see them. But, yeah, now everybody can see everything, and that would have been a wonderful thing to have happened. I will say, though, that the system being the way it was kept me employed for quite a while longer than it might have otherwise.
Absolutely. Well, we immediately missed you when you left, moving on to greener pastures with the Charlotte Observer, of course, after you left Augusta. But it's been an incredible journey for you, and you have navigated the daily newspaper portion of your career through to online writing, and you've had some incredible experience working with national online websites, some fantastic sports writing along the way with your friend Joe Posnanski, and now you're freelancing pretty much, of course, with writing your book. Did the response to the book surprise you? If you don't mind me saying, because I follow you online and we're Facebook friends, I think you were a little bit shocked by how popular this manuscript is.
Yeah, this book that just came out a couple weeks ago, The Elephant in the Room, which is basically about my struggle as a fat guy to try to get smaller in a country that's getting bigger all the time.
I apologize, Tommy.
Let
me tell you, I have talked about this book so much. People listening to my show know about it, and I'm sorry I didn't make that clear to you.
That's fine.
Go ahead.
That's fine. It has shocked me and surprised me. You know, you always dream that people notice your book and care about it and read it and tell other people to read it. That's the dream. The truth is that for the majority of books, they might get a little attention or none at all. And so for this one to get the attention it's gotten, you know, not just in the Carolinas where I live now, but throughout the South and throughout the country, has been incredibly gratifying to me. You know, to see that it has caught fire a little bit and that people are reading it and buying it and talking about it in lots of different places. You know, it is a little bit of a shock to me because I try to have low expectations for things, and so I'm not disappointed when things don't turn out well. Well, I had kind of low expectations for this, and it has cleared every bar I could set.
Being interviewed on the Today Show, pretty heady stuff, and I was going to strive to ask you a question you have not been asked so far in your myriad collection of interviews on this thing. So here's my question no one else has asked you. What's the green room of the Today Show like?
So it's not green, for one thing. It's kind of orange. And it's a big room. It's probably the size of like a hotel room. And in there are some kind of a couple of couches and benches and stuff. There's a spread with some snacks and water and things like that. And then there's a bunch of people kind of coming in and out who are going to be on the show shortly or just come back from it. There was some band sitting across from my wife and I. I still to this day don't know who they were, but they were sitting over there talking. They come in at some point, somebody comes in, and they take you to a little hair and makeup room where they put a little stuff to try to smooth out the bags under my eyes and sprayed a little gunk in my hair, and they took my sport coat and pressed it.
No truth to the rumor they put mousse in your beard, is there?
No. Okay. They didn't touch the beard. I thought they would, but they didn't. And so you sit in there for about half an hour and just sort of small talked with everybody. And then they took me to a smaller room that's maybe the size of a I don't know, a large bathroom or so, that's right next door to the actual set. And you're in there just a few minutes, and then they take you out to the set. And Austin, the whole thing, you know, once they took me out to the set, it's this incredible machine. You know, they take you out there, they sit you down, you do like 30 seconds of small talk with Al Roker while they're having a commercial. They go 3, 2, 1, they do the whole thing. It's over before you know it. They're very gracious, but they say, okay, you got to go. The next person's coming in. And 3 minutes after it was over, we were out on the street. You know, it was it was just done. It was. I've been telling everybody, it's like walking through a car wash. You know, you just get kind of battered from all sides. You come out of the other end, and like, what happened? But it's. But everybody was super nice, super friendly and gracious. And, you know, for a lot of people, your job or whatever is not a legitimate thing until they see you on TV or on the radio or something. So there's some people, including some of my family, that like now they think I'm a big deal because I've been on TV.
Well, your family is an integral part of the story, and in a wonderfully touching and an incredibly sad way. I know that it breaks your heart that your mother wasn't alive to see this incredible embrace of your work, but the good news is she did get to read the vast and overwhelming majority of the manuscript before she passed away.
She did. She read an early version that didn't change that much. So she saw pretty much what everybody else was reading, and she had two criticisms. One, she liked the book, but she had two criticisms. One, there are too many bad words in there. And two, if she had known I had that much to drink while I was a student at UGA, she wouldn't have sent me so much money, which is a totally fair comment, because I did use the petty cash she sent me now and then and converted that into beer at various establishments in Athens. And so I think if she had known that, I would have had to be dry for a while.
Well, I was hanging out in Athens about a year or two after you had come through, and I got to tell you, beer was in shortage. I said, "What's the?" They said, "Well, Tommy was here, and that's the reason."
it took a while to resupply.
Your book is an incredible memoir of a life that is still being lived, and I don't know any other way to put it. As a guy myself that has struggled with my weight my entire life, I'm struggling with it right now, as a matter of fact, I related to a lot of what you said. I'm not trying to put myself in your spot, because you're dealing with it at a much higher level than most of us ever have to. But were you surprised at the number of people that appear to be normal in size or just slightly bigger than you that turn around and say, man, I know exactly what you're talking about?
It is a surprise a little bit, because, you know, you only see other people's exterior. You don't know what's going on inside their head. And there are a lot of people who are, you know, in what we would think of as sort of the average range of sizes, but who keep gaining and losing maybe the same 20 or 30 pounds over and over again. And it's a real difficult struggle for them. Beyond that, I think there are, you know, everybody struggles with something, whether it's their weight or drugs or alcohol or they gamble too much or they, you know, they overshop or whatever it is. Almost everybody has some vice in their lives that they have a real difficulty controlling. And I always wanted this book to be for more than just people who are overweight. I wanted it to be for people who are struggling with any big issue in their life, and to see some of the common patterns that all of us think about and all of us feel and all of us worry about, so that maybe we can, you know, talk about these things together.
So you've had a lot of folks reaching out to you. I have to ask this. Has Hollywood reached out to you yet? Because I think this book will make a hell of a movie.
Well, you know, I had a couple of just real light feelers, I guess I would call it, from people who I looked up later, and they have produced a couple of things. I'm sure if there's any serious discussion about that, then I'll get my, you know, agent and all those people involved. I don't know whether this is the kind of thing that translates to a movie or TV or whatever. It would be nice if it did, but it's just not something I thought about even once when I was writing this book. I just wanted to
There's
get the book
every
out.
Everything is in here. You've got comedy, you've got pathos, you've got romance. The only thing you're missing is a gunfight.
Well, you know, it does make me wish I'd been in a couple more gunfights, you know, just so I could put that in the story. Now, who knows? You know, I I've heard stories about, obviously we've all seen true stories that make it into movies or TV shows, and then I hear about a million that people seem to be interested in, and then they just kind of go away and never happen. The odds against that are extremely long, and I'll be glad if it happens, but I'm not going to worry about it for a second if it doesn't.
Understood. You the last thing that you wrote, as far as a chronological update goes before your acknowledgments, was on page 239, and it was an update on your weight. This is not a diet book. I don't want anybody to think that Tommy shares recipes other than the peanut butter logs. We won't get into that. The book is not a diet book. It is a story of a man living his life and the decisions that he's made to try and cope with this lifelong problem that he's had. Your weight, January 1st, 2017, 386. I'm going to be indelicate. How you doing with that now?
So the short answer is I'm about where I was then, and here's the long answer. Not too long after that, after the book ended, my wife and I went through a really difficult time family-wise. So my best friend, a guy I've known since seventh grade, died suddenly of a heart attack. A month later, my father-in-law, Alex's dad, died suddenly, kind of out of the blue. And a couple months after that, my mom died after a very long illness that had us going back and forth to South Georgia over and over again over the course of a year or two. So we got hit with three just big blows back to back to back. And during that time, I gained some weight back. I just could not apply the discipline to myself that I did during the course of the book and during the two or three years after that. But here's the difference. When the grieving subsided for a little while, or when the worst of it went away, I got right back into my program because I knew that I had just very recently been successful at it in a way that I'd never been successful before that. And so I had experience with success, which I think is the biggest benefit of any sustainable weight loss program, or any sustainable, any kind of being a bad habit. I knew I could do it. And so I got back on the horse, so to speak, and I lost all that weight I gained back, and now I'm headed back down the scale again.
That's great. Well, Augusta is so proud of you in so many different ways. And any chances you'll be coming here for a book signing and a public appearance?
Well, I'd certainly love to. The main phase of my book tour ends next week. And I think what they'll do then, this is all up to my publisher, basically. They'll gauge how the book's doing and where it's selling well and if it might be worth expanding the tour. I mean, basically, I've been in the Carolinas and a little bit in Georgia, but I haven't gone as far out as Augusta. And Augusta's certainly on the list of the next places I would want to go. So if it's agreeable with them, I would love to do that.
Well, you've got any number of folks here in Augusta that will gladly not only show up, but it may help you organize that event. So shoot me a note if there's anything we can do. I can get you a venue for free. The local bookstore here is always eager to have authors of with local connections and of note here. So we'll figure out a way to make it work for you.
Oh, that's great. I'd love to do it.
But listen, our best to Alex. I know it's sometimes kind of a pain to be married to a superstar overnight. So tell her we feel her pain.
Well, the way we do it around the house is like, somebody called me an icon one time, which just made both of us laugh hysterically. so around our house, it's like, okay, icon, wash the dishes.
There you go.
All right, icon, take out the trash. So believe me, my head is not growing at all because of this, because she has kept me well grounded.
Well, again, Tommy, it's an honor, and we so look forward to seeing how this book continues to move up the charts on the bestseller list. It's doing well. You got some love from the New York Times, I just saw.
I did, yeah. The New York Times wrote a really nice review. The Today Show, I did some stuff with NPR. It's been just a great ride so far, and I'm going to ride it as long as I can.
Oh, and you made it into Rolling Stone, too.
I did. I made it to Rolling Stone, which was the 16-year-old me was absolutely thrilled because that was my favorite magazine back then and for a long time.
I was going to say more than Mad Magazine? Come on now.
Oh, absolutely. Rolling Stone, all those. I did love Mad Magazine, but Rolling Stone was like the big thing in my teenage years.
Before you actually read what they had to write, was a little part of you afraid that you were about to be perhaps blasted by your favorite publication of all time?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Every time I hear there's a new review somewhere, I think, is this going to be the one that hammers me, you know? Because somebody's going to. And so far, everybody's been incredibly nice. Everybody seems to have liked the book who's reviewed it. But that, you know, that's coming. And as I say in the book, anything you write that's good enough to be loved, somebody's also going to hate it. And so I'm just waiting to hear from those folks, too.
I got to tell you, man, I've recommended this book to everybody that listens to my show, and I've had a lot of folks. My producer, Ben, who's standing by. Ben, what was your thought on it?
It's phenomenal. Such a good writer, and I can relate to all of it, being a big guy myself, at A+.
And by the way,
thank you, Ben.
Ben doesn't read a lot of books without a lot of pictures, so I got to tell you.
It took me a while, yeah.
That was real big. Yeah. I know how you felt, though, about the Rolling Stone, because I've always been a fan of Vanity Fair, and they did an article on Sacha Baron Cohen's faux show, as I like to call it, FAUX, faux show, This Is America. Did you see any of that, by the way?
I heard about it. I never watched it. I heard that there was one of the, like, a Georgia legislator or something, got some trouble over that, right?
He targeted conservatives all over the country, and I was his first target.
Oh, really?
And he spent 90 minutes on the air with me. And thank God in heaven, I'm not going to say that I knew it was him, but we had a feeling something was up. I'm a big Sacha Baron Cohen fan. He was in this heavy makeup professional job. I did not spot him. But bottom line, I ended up kibitzing with him for 90 minutes. And because I didn't make a fool of myself, they didn't use anything. They used my picture a couple of times promoting the show, but not a single bit of our exchange was featured. I later heard back that I apparently wasn't outrageous enough for him.
Too bad that you weren't dumb enough to fall for his trick.
Well, and I was ranked by Vanity Fair as the number one person as far as who took what he did in stride and who rolled with it the best. And I ended up being replaced as number one. I think it moved me down to number two because somebody else, as the show progressed, he did an interview with it, was revealed that I guess was a little bit more with it than I was. But I beat out some very noteworthy names on that list. So I would say
he's, given his history, he's very good at fooling people.
Oh, it's crazy. So, it's crazy.
I would say you did well not to fall for it.
Well, it wasn't Rolling Stone, but it was pretty cool to me. Well, listen, again, Tommy, best to you, my friend. I'm so proud of all that you've done. And the elephant in the room is the book. It's on Amazon and everywhere books are sold. TommyTomlinson.com is not only your key to keeping up with what's going on with the book, but everything that Tommy's doing, and he is a busy guy. Our best to your wife, Alex, and we appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you so much, Austin. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Tommy Tomlinson from his home in Charlotte, North Carolina. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to him.
Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show. Listen to Austin weekdays from 3 till 6 on Augusta's News Talk and Information Station, WGAC, at 95.1 FM, 101.9 FM, and AM 580. Stream it live on WGAC.com or on the WGAC mobile app. Thanks for listening to the Rhodes Rewind of the Austin Rhodes Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.